The Fellowship of the Ring, Disc 7.
Chapter 10. Strider. Frodo, Pippin, and Sam made their way back to the parlour. There was no light. Merry was not there, and the fire had burned low. It was not until they had puffed up the embers into a blaze and thrown on a couple of faggots that they discovered Strider had come with them. There he was, calmly sitting in a chair by the door.
"Hallo," said Pippin. "Who are you, and what do you want?"
"I am called Strider," he answered. "And though he may have forgotten it, your friend promised to have a quiet talk with me."
"You said I might hear something to my advantage, I believe," said Frodo. "What have you to say?"
"Several things," answered Strider. "But, of course, I have my price."
"What do you mean?"
asked Frodo sharply. "Don't be alarmed. I mean just this. I'll tell you what I know, and give you some good advice, but I shall want a reward."
"And what will that be, pray?" said Frodo.
He suspected now that he had fallen in with a rascal, and he thought uncomfortably that he had brought only a little money with him. All of it would hardly satisfy a rogue, and he could not spare any of it.
"No more than you can afford," answered Strider with a slow smile, as if he guessed Frodo's thoughts. "Just this. You must take me along with you, until I wish to leave you."
"Oh, indeed," replied Frodo, surprised, but not much relieved. "Even if I wanted another companion, I should not agree to any such thing until I knew a good deal more about you and your business."
"Excellent!" exclaimed Strider, crossing his legs and sitting back comfortably. "You seem to be coming to your senses again, and that is all to the good. You've been much too careless so far. Very well. I'll tell you what I know, and leave the reward to you. You may be glad to grant it when you've heard me."
"Go on, then," said Frodo. "What do you know?"
"Too much. Too many dark things," said Strider grimly. "But as for your business—" He got up and went to the door, opened it quickly and looked out. Then he shut it quietly and sat down again. "I have quick ears," he went on, lowering his voice, "and though I cannot disappear, I have hunted many wild and wary things, and I can usually avoid being seen, if I wish. Now, I was behind the hedge this evening on the road west of Bree, when four hobbits came out of the downlands. I need not repeat all that they said to old Bombadil or to one another, but one thing interested me. "Please remember," said one of them, "that the name Baggins must not be mentioned. I am Mr. Underhill, if any name must be given." That interested me so much that I followed them here. I slipped over the gate just behind them. Maybe Mr. Baggins has an honest reason for leaving his name behind, but if so, I should advise him and his friends to be more careful.
"I don't see what interest my name has for any one in Bree," said Frodo angrily, "and I've still to learn why it interests you. Mr. Strider may have an honest reason for spying and eavesdropping, but if so, I should advise him to explain it."
"Well answered," said Strider, laughing. "But the explanation is simple. I was looking for a hobbit called Frodo Baggins. I wanted to find him quickly. I had learned that he was carrying out of the Shire— well, a secret that concerned me and my friends.
Now don't mistake me," he cried, as Frodo rose from his seat and Sam jumped up with a scowl. "I shall take more care of the secret than you do, and care is needed." He leaned forward and looked at them. "Watch every shadow," he said in a low voice. "Black horsemen have passed through Bree. On Monday one came down the Greenway, they say, and another appeared later, coming up the Greenway from the south." There was a silence. At last Frodo spoke to Pippin and Sam. "I ought to have guessed it from the way the gatekeeper greeted us," he said, "and the landlord seems to have heard something. Why did he press us to join the company? And why on earth did we behave so foolishly? We ought to have stayed quiet in here."
"It would have been better," said Strider. "I would have stopped your going into the common room if I could, but the innkeeper would not let me in to see you or take a message."
"Do you think he—" began Frodo.
"No, I don't think any harm of old Butterbur, only he does not altogether like mysterious vagabonds of my sort." Frodo gave him a puzzled look. "Well, I have rather a rascally look, have I not?" said Strider, with a curl of his lip and a queer gleam in his eye. "But I hope we shall get to know one another better. When we do, I hope you will explain what happened at the end of your song, for that little prank—"
"It was sheer accident," interrupted Frodo.
"I wonder," said Strider. "Accident, then. That accident has made your position dangerous."
"Hardly more than it was already," said Frodo. "I knew these horsemen were pursuing me, but now, at any rate, they seem to have missed me and to have gone away."
"You must not count on that," said Strider sharply. "They will return, and more are coming. There are others. I know their number. I know these riders." He paused, and his eyes were cold and hard. "And there are some folk in Bree who are not to be trusted," he went on. "Bill Ferny, for instance. He has an evil name in the Bree land, and queer folk call at his house. You must have noticed him among the company, a swarthy, sneering fellow. He was very close with one of the southern strangers, and they slipped out together just after your accident. Not all of those southerners mean well, and as for Ferny, he would sell anything to anybody, or make mischief for amusement."
"What will Ferny sell, and what has my accident got to do with him?" said Frodo, still determined not to understand Strider's hints.
"News of you, of course," answered Strider. "An account of your performance would be very interesting to certain people. After that they would hardly need to be told your real name. It seems to me only too likely that they will hear of it before this night is over. Is that enough? You can do as you like about my reward, take me as a guide or not. But I may say that I know all the lands between the Shire and the Misty Mountains, for I have wandered over them for many years. I am older than I look. I might prove useful. You will have to leave the open road after tonight, for the horsemen will watch it night and day. You may escape from Bree, and be allowed to go forward while the sun is up, but you won't get far. They will come on you in the wild, in some dark place where there is no help. Do you wish them to find you? They are terrible." The hobbits looked at him, and saw with surprise that his face was drawn as if with pain, and his hands clenched the arms of his chair. The room was very quiet and still, and the light seemed to have grown dim. For a while he sat with unseeing eyes, as if walking in distant memory, or listening to sounds in the night far away. "There," he cried after a moment, drawing his hand across his brow, "perhaps I know more about these pursuers than you do. You fear them, but you do not fear them enough yet. Tomorrow you will have to escape, if you can. Strider can take you by paths that are seldom trodden. Will you have him?" There was a heavy silence. Frodo made no answer. His mind was confused with doubt and fear. Sam frowned and looked at his master, and at last he broke out, "With your leave, Mr. Frodo, I'd say no. This Strider here, he warns and he says take care, and I say yes to that, and let's begin with him. He comes out of the wild, and I never heard no good of such folk. He knows something, that's plain, and more than I like, but it's no reason why we should let him go leading us out into some dark place far from help, as he puts it." Pippin fidgeted and looked uncomfortable. Strider didn't reply to Sam, but turned his keen eyes on Frodo. Frodo caught his glance and looked away. "No," he said slowly, "I don't agree. I think you are not really as you choose to look. You began to talk to me like the Bree folk, but your voice has changed. Still, Sam seems right in this. I don't see why you should warn us to take care, and yet ask us to take you on trust. Why the disguise? Who are you? What do you really know about my business? And how do you know it?"
"The lesson in caution has been well learned," said Strider with a grim smile. "But caution is one thing, and wavering is another. You will never get to Rivendell now on your own, and to trust me is your only chance. You must make up your mind. I will answer some of your questions, if that will help you to do so. But why should you believe my story if you don't trust me already? Still, here it is."
At that moment there came a knock at the door. Mr. Butterbur had arrived with candles, and behind him was Nob with cans of hot water. Strider withdrew into a dark corner.
"I've come to bid you good night," said the landlord, putting the candles on the tables. "Nob, take the water to the rooms."
He came in and shut the door.
"It's like this," he began, hesitating and looking troubled. "If I've done any harm, I'm sorry indeed. But one thing drives out another, as you'll admit, and I'm a busy man. But first one thing and then another this week have jogged my memory, as the saying goes, and not too late, I hope. You see, I was asked to look out for hobbits of the Shire, and for one by the name of Baggins in particular."
"And what has that got to do with me?" asked Frodo.
"Ah, you know best," said the landlord, knowingly. "I won't give you away, but I was told that this Baggins would be going by the name of Underhill, and I was given a description that fits you well enough, if I may say so."
"Indeed. Let's have it, then," said Frodo, unwisely interrupting.
"A stout little fellow with red cheeks," said Mr. Butterbur solemnly. Pippin chuckled, but Sam looked indignant. "That won't help you much. It goes for most hobbits, Barley," he says to me, continued Mr. Butterbur with a glance at Pippin. "But this one is taller than some and fairer than most, and he has a cleft in his chin. Perky chap with a bright eye.
Begging your pardon, but he said it, not me."
"He said it? And who was he?" asked Frodo eagerly.
"Ah, that was Gandalf, if you know who I mean. A wizard, they say he is. But he's a good friend of mine, whether or no. But now I don't know what he'll have to say to me if I see him again. Turn all my ale sour or me into a block of wood, I shouldn't wonder. He's a bit hasty. Still, what's done can't be undone."
"Well, what have you done?" said Frodo, getting impatient with the slow unravelling of Butterbur's thoughts.
"Where was I?" said the landlord, pausing and snapping his fingers. "Ah, yes, old Gandalf. 3 months back he walked right into my room without a knock. Barley, he says, I'm off in the morning. Will you do something for me? You've only to name it, I said. I'm in a hurry, said he, and I've no time myself, but I want a message took to the Shire. Have you anyone you can send and trust to go? I can find someone, I said, tomorrow, maybe, or the day after. Make it tomorrow, he says, and then he gave me a letter. It's addressed plain enough, said Mr. Butterbur, producing a letter from his pocket, and reading out the address slowly and proudly. He valued his reputation as a lettered man. Mr. Frodo Baggins, Bag End, Hobbiton in the Shire.
A letter for me from Gandalf, cried Frodo.
Ah, said Mr. Butterbur, then your right name is Baggins.
It is, said Frodo, and you had better give me that letter at once and explain why you never sent it. That's what you came to tell me, I suppose, though you've taken a long time to come to the point. Poor Mr. Butterbur looked troubled.
You're right, master, he said, and I beg your pardon. And I'm mortal afraid of what Gandalf will say, if harm comes of it. But I didn't keep it back a purpose. I put it by safe. Then I couldn't find anybody willing to go to the Shire next day, nor the day after, and none of my own folk were to spare. And then one thing after another drove it out of my mind. I'm a busy man. I'll do what I can to set matters right. And if there's any help I can give, you've only to name it. Leaving the letter aside, I promised Gandalf no less. Barley, he says to me, this friend of mine from the Shire, he may be coming out this way before long, him and another. He'll be calling himself Underhill, mind that. But you need ask no questions, and if I'm not with him, he may be in trouble, and he may need help. Do whatever you can for him, and I'll be grateful, he says. And here you are, and trouble is not far off, seemingly.
What do you mean? Asked Frodo.
These black men, said the landlord, lowering his voice. They're looking for Baggins, and if they mean well, then I'm a hobbit. It was on Monday, and all the dogs were yammering and the geese screaming. Uncanny, I called it. Nob, he came and told me that two black men were at the door asking for a hobbit called Baggins. Nob's hair was all stood on end,
I bid the blackfellows be off, and slammed the door on them. But they've been asking the same question all the way to Archit, I hear. And that ranger, Strider, he's been asking questions too. Tried to get in here to see you, before you'd had bite or sup, he did.
He did, said Strider suddenly, coming forward into the light. And much trouble would have been saved if you'd let him in, Barleyman.
The landlord jumped with surprise.
You! He cried. You're always popping up. What do you want now?
He's here with my leave, said Frodo. He came to offer me his help.
Well, you may know your own business, maybe,
said Mr. Butterbur, looking suspiciously at Strider.
But if I was in your plight, I wouldn't take up with a ranger.
Then who would you take up with? Asked Strider.
A fat innkeeper who only remembers his own name because people shouted at him all day. They cannot stay in the pony for ever, and they cannot go home. They have a long road before them. Will you go with them and keep the black men off?
Me? Leave Bree? I wouldn't do that for any money, said Mr. Butterbur, looking really scared. But why can't you stay here quiet for a bit, Mr. Underhill? What are all these queer goings on? What are these black men after, and where do they come from, I'd like to know?
I'm sorry I can't explain it all, answered Frodo. I'm tired and very worried, and it's a long tale. But if you mean to help me, I ought to warn you that you'll be in danger as long as I'm in your house. These black riders, I'm not sure, but I fear they come from...
They come from Mordor, said Strider in a low voice. From Mordor, Barleyman, if that means anything to you.
Save us,
cried Mr. Butterbur, turning pale. The name evidently was known to him.
That is the worst news that's come to Bree in my time.
It is, said Frodo. Are you still willing to help me?
I am, said Mr. Butterbur. More than ever, though I don't know what the likes of me can do against,
he faltered.
Against the shadow in the east, said Strider, quietly.
Not much, Barleyman, but every little helps. You can let Mr. Underhill stay here tonight, as Mr. Underhill, and you can forget the name of Baggins till he's far away.
I'll do that, said Butterbur.
But they'll find out he's here without help from me, I'm afraid. It's a pity Mr. Baggins drew attention to himself this evening, to say no more. The story of that Mr. Bilbo's going off has been heard before tonight in Bree. Even our Nob has been doing some guessing in his slow pate, and there are others in Bree quicker in the uptake than he is.
Well, we can only hope the riders won't come back yet, said Frodo.
I hope not, indeed, said Butterbur. But spooks or no spooks, they won't get in the pony so easy. Don't you worry till the morning. Nob'll say no word. No black man shall pass my doors while I can stand on my legs. Me and my folk'll keep watch tonight. But you had best get some sleep if you can.
In any case, we must be called at dawn, said Frodo. We must get off as early as possible. Breakfast at 6:30, please.
Right, I'll see to the orders, said the landlord. Good night, Mr. Baggins. Underhill, I should say. Good night. Now, bless me. Where's your Mr. Brandybuck?
I don't know, said Frodo with sudden anxiety. They'd forgotten all about Merry, and it was getting late.
I'm afraid he's out. He said something about going for a breath of air.
Well, you do want looking after, no mistake. Your party might be on a holiday, said Butterbur. I must go and bar the doors quick, but I'll see your friend is let in when he comes. I'd better send Nob to look for him. Good night to you all.
At last Mr. Butterbur went out, with another doubtful look at Strider and a shake of his head. His footsteps retreated down the passage.
Well, said Strider, when are you going to open that letter?
Frodo looked carefully at the seal before he broke it. It seemed certainly to be Gandalf's. Inside, written in the wizard's strong but graceful script, was the following message. The Prancing Pony, Bree. Mid-Year's Day, Shire Year, 1418. Dear Frodo, bad news has reached me here. I must go off at once. You had better leave Bag End soon, and get out of the Shire before the end of July at latest. I will return as soon as I can,
and I will follow you if I find that you are gone. Leave a message for me here if you pass through Bree. You can trust the landlord, Butterbur. You may meet a friend of mine on the road, a man lean, dark, tall, by some called Strider. He knows our business and will help you. Make for Rivendell. There I hope we may meet again. If I do not come, Elrond will advise you. Yours in haste, Gandalf. P.S. Do not use it again, not for any reason whatever. Do not travel by night. P.P.S. Make sure that it is the real Strider. There are many strange men on the roads. His true name is Aragorn. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadow shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. P.P.P.S. I hope Butterbur sends this promptly. A worthy man, but his memory's like a lumber room. Thing wanted always buried. If he forgets, I shall roast him. Farewell. Frodo read the letter to himself, and then passed it to Pippin and Sam. "Really, old Butterbur has made a mess of things," he said. "He deserves roasting. If I'd got this at once, we might all have been safe in Rivendell by now. But what can have happened to Gandalf? He writes as if he was going into great danger." "He has been doing that for many years," said Strider. Frodo turned and looked at him thoughtfully, wondering about Gandalf's second postscript. "Why didn't you tell me that you were Gandalf's friend at once?" he asked. "It would have saved time." "Would it? Would any of you have believed me till now?" said Strider. "I knew nothing of this letter. For all I knew, I had to persuade you to trust me without proofs, if I was to help you. In any case, I did not intend to tell you all about myself at once. I had to study you first and make sure of you. The enemy has set traps for me before now. As soon as I had made up my mind, I was ready to tell you whatever you asked. But I must admit," he added with a queer laugh, "that I hoped you would take to me for my own sake. A hunted man sometimes wearies of distrust and longs for friendship, but there, I believe my looks are against me."
"They are, at first sight at any rate," laughed Pippin with sudden relief after reading Gandalf's letter. "But handsome is as handsome does, as we say in the Shire, and I dare say we shall all look much the same after lying for days in hedges and ditches."
"It would take more than a few days, or weeks, or years of wandering in the wild to make you look like Strider," he answered. "And you would die first, unless you are made of sterner stuff than you look to be."
Pippin subsided, but Sam was not daunted, and he still eyed Strider dubiously.
"How do you know you are the Strider that Gandalf speaks about?" he demanded. "You never mentioned Gandalf till this letter came out." "You might be a play-acting spy, for all I can see, trying to get us to go with you. You might have done in the real Strider and took his clothes. What have you to say to that?"
"That you are a stout fellow," answered Strider. "But I'm afraid my only answer to you, Sam Gamgee, is this. If I had killed the real Strider, I could kill you. And I should have killed you already without so much talk. If I was after the ring, I could have it now."
He stood up and seemed suddenly to grow taller. In his eyes gleamed a light, keen and commanding. Throwing back his cloak, he laid his hand on the hilt of a sword that had hung concealed by his side. They did not dare to move. Sam sat wide-mouthed, staring at him dumbly.
"But I am the real Strider, fortunately," he said, looking down at them with his face softened by a sudden smile. "I am Aragorn, son of Arathorn, and if by life or death I can save you, I will."
There was a long silence. At last Frodo spoke with hesitation. "I believed that you were a friend before the letter came," he said, "or at least I wished to.
"'You've frightened me several times tonight, "'but never in the way that servants of the enemy would, "'or so I imagine. "'I think one of his spies would, well, seem fairer "'and feel fouler, if you understand.'
"'I see,' laughed Strider. "'I look foul and feel fair, is that it? "'All that is gold does not glitter, "'not all who wander are lost.'
"'Did the verses apply to you, then?' asked Frodo.
"'I couldn't make out what they were about. "'But how did you know that they were in Gandalf's letter, "'if you've never seen it?' "'I did not know,' he answered. "'But I am Aragorn, and those verses go with that name.' "'He drew out his sword, and they saw that the blade was indeed "'broken a foot below the hilt. "'Not much use, is it, Sam?' said Strider. "'But the time is near when it shall be forged anew.'
Sam said nothing.
"Well," said Strider, "with Sam's permission we will call that settled. Strider shall be your guide. We shall have a rough road tomorrow. Even if we are allowed to leave Bree unhindered, we can hardly hope now to leave it unnoticed. But I shall try to get lost as soon as possible. I know one or two ways out of Breeland other than the main road. If once we shake off the pursuit, I shall make for Weathertop."
"'Weathertop?' said Sam.
"'What's that?' "'It's a hill, just to the north of the road, about halfway from here to Rivendell. "'It commands a wide view all round, and there we shall have a chance to look about us. "'Gandalf will make for that point, if he follows us. "'After Weathertop our journey will become more difficult, and we shall have to choose between various dangers.'
"'When did you last see Gandalf?' asked Frodo. "'Do you know where he is, or what he's doing?' Strider looked grave.
"'I don't know,' he said. "'I came west with him in the spring. "'I've often kept watch on the borders of the Shire in the last few years, "'when he was busy elsewhere. "'He seldom left it unguarded. "'We last met on the 1st of May, at Sarn Ford, down the Brandywine. "'He told me that his business with you had gone well, "'and that you would be starting for Rivendell in the last week of September.' "'As I knew he was at your side, I went away on a journey of my own, "'and that has proved ill, for plainly some news reached him, "'and I was not at hand to help. "'I'm troubled, for the first time since I've known him. "'We should have had messages, even if he could not come himself. "'When I returned, many days ago, I heard the ill news. "'The tidings had gone far and wide that Gandalf was missing "'and the horseman had been seen.' It was the elven folk of Gildor that told me this, and later they told me that you had left your home, but there was no news of your leaving Buckland. I've been watching the East Road anxiously.
"'Do you think the Black Riders have anything to do with it, with Gandalf's absence, I mean?' asked Frodo.
"'I don't know of anything else that could have hindered him, except the enemy himself,' said Strider. "'But don't give up hope. Gandalf is greater than you Shire folk know.' "'As a rule, you can only see his jokes and toys, "'but this business of ours will be his greatest task.'
"'Pippin yawned.
"'Oh, I'm sorry,' he said, "'but I'm dead tired. "'In spite of all the danger and worry, "'I must go to bed or sleep where I sit. "'Where is that silly fellow, Merry? "'It would be the last straw if we had to go out in the dark to look for him.'
"'At that moment they heard a door slam.' Then feet came running along the passage. Merry came in with a rush, followed by Nob. He shut the door hastily and leaned against it. He was out of breath. They stared at him in alarm for a moment before he gasped,
"'I've seen them, Frodo! I've seen them! Black Riders!'
"'Black Riders?' cried Frodo. "'Where?'
"'Here, in the village.
I stayed indoors for an hour. Then, as you did not come back, I went out for a stroll. I'd come back again and was standing just outside the light of the lamp looking at the stars. Suddenly I shivered and felt that something horrible was creeping near. There was a sort of deeper shade among the shadows across the road, just beyond the edge of the lamplight. It slid away at once into the dark without a sound. There was no horse.
"'Which way did it go?' asked Strider suddenly and sharply.
Merry started, noticing the stranger for the first time.
"'Go on,' said Frodo. "'This is a friend of Gandalf's. I'll explain later.'
"'It seemed to make off up the road eastward,' continued Merry.
I tried to follow. Of course it vanished almost at once, but I went round the corner and on as far as the last house on the road.
Strider looked at Mary with wonder.
"You have a stout heart," he said, "but it was foolish."
"I don't know," said Mary.
"Neither brave nor silly, I think. I could hardly help myself. I seemed to be drawn somehow. Anyway, I went, and suddenly I heard voices by the hedge. One was muttering, and the other was whispering or hissing. I couldn't hear a word that was said. I didn't creep any closer, because I began to tremble all over. Then I felt terrified, and I turned back, and was just going to bolt home, when something came behind me, and I fell over."
"I found him, sir," put in Nob. "Mr. Butterbur sent me out with a lantern. I went down to Westgate, and then back up towards Southgate. Just nigh Bill Fernie's house, I thought I could see something in the road. I couldn't swear to it, but it looked to me as if two men were stooping over something, lifting it. I gave a shout, but when I got up to the spot there was no signs of them, and only Mr. Brandybuck lying by the roadside. He seemed to be asleep. 'I thought I'd fallen into deep water,' he says to me when I shook him. Very queer he was, and as soon as I'd roused him, he got up and ran back here like a hare."
"I'm afraid that's true," said Mary. "Though I don't know what I said. I had an ugly dream, which I can't remember. I went to pieces. I don't know what came over me."
"I do," said Strider. "The black breath. The riders must have left their horses outside and passed back through the south gate in secret. They will know all the news now, for they've visited Bill Fernie, and probably that southerner was a spy as well. Something may happen in the night before we leave Bree."
"What will happen?" said Mary. "Will they attack the inn?"
"No, I think not," said Strider. "They're not all here yet, and in any case, that is not their way. In dark and loneliness they are strongest. They will not openly attack a house where there are lights and many people, not until they're desperate, not while all the long leagues of Eriador still lie before us. But their power is in terror, and already some in Bree are in their clutch. They will drive these wretches to some evil work, Fernie and some of the strangers, and maybe the gatekeeper too. They had words with Harry at Westgate on Monday. I was watching them. He was white and shaking when they left him."
"We seem to have enemies all around," said Frodo. "What are we to do?"
"Stay here, and do not go to your rooms. They're sure to have found out which those are. The hobbit rooms have windows looking north and close to the ground. We'll all remain together and bar this window and the door. But first Nob and I will fetch your luggage." While Strider was gone, Frodo gave Mary a rapid account of all that had happened since supper. Mary was still reading and pondering Gandalf's letter when Strider and Nob returned.
"Well, masters," said Nob, "I've ruffled up the clothes and put in a bolster down the middle of each bed. And I made a nice imitation of your head with a brown woollen hat, Mr. Bag Underhill, sir," he added with a grin. Pippin laughed. "Very lifelike," he said. "But what will happen when they've penetrated the disguise?"
"We shall see," said Strider. "Let's hope to hold the fort till morning."
"Good night to you," said Nob,
and went off to take his part in the watch on the doors. Their bags and gear they piled on the parlour floor. They pushed a low chair against the door and shut the window. Peering out, Frodo saw that the night was still clear. The sickle was swinging bright above the shoulders of Bree Hill. He then closed and barred the heavy inside shutters and drew the curtains together. Strider built up the fire and blew out the candles. The hobbits lay down on their blankets with their feet towards the hearth, but Strider settled himself in the chair against the door. They talked for a little, for Mary still had several questions to ask.
"Jumped over the moon," chuckled Mary as he rolled himself in his blanket. "Very ridiculous of you, Frodo. But I wish I'd been there to see. The worthies of Bree will be discussing it 100 years hence."
"I hope so," said Strider.
Then they all fell silent, and one by one the hobbits dropped off to sleep.
Chapter 11 A Knife in the Dark. As they prepared for sleep in the inn at Bree, darkness lay on Buckland. A mist strayed in the dells and along the river bank. The house at Crick Hollow stood silent. Fatty Bulger opened the door cautiously and peered out. A feeling of fear had been growing on him all day, and he was unable to rest or go to bed. There was a brooding threat in the breathless night air. As he stared out into the gloom, a black shadow moved under the trees. The gate seemed to open of its own accord and close again without a sound. Terror seized him. He shrank back, and for a moment he stood trembling in the hall. Then he shut and locked the door. The night deepened. There came the soft sound of horses led with stealth along the lane. Outside the gate they stopped, and three black figures entered, like shades of night creeping across the ground. One went to the door, one to the corner of the house on either side, and there they stood, as still as the shadows of stones, while night went slowly on. The house and the quiet trees seemed to be waiting breathlessly. There was a faint stir in the leaves, and a cock crowed far away. The cold hour before dawn was passing. The figure by the door moved. In the dark, without moon or stars, a drawn blade gleamed, as if a chill light had been unsheathed. There was a blow, soft but heavy, and the door shuddered.
"Open in the name of Mordor," said a voice thin and menacing.
At a second blow the door yielded and fell back. With timbers burst and lock broken, the black figures passed swiftly in. At that moment, among the trees nearby, a horn rang out. It rent the night like fire on a hilltop.
"Awake! Fear! Fire! Foes! Awake!"
Fatty Bulger had not been idle. As soon as he saw the dark shapes creep from the garden, he knew that he must run for it or perish. And run he did, out of the back door, through the garden and over the fields. When he reached the nearest house, more than a mile away, he collapsed on the doorstep.
"No! No! No!" he was crying. "No, not me! I haven't got it!"
It was some time before anyone could make out what he was babbling about. At last they got the idea that enemies were in Buckland, some strange invasion from the old forest, and then they lost no more time.
"Fear! Fire! Foes!"
The brandy bucks were blowing the horn call of Buckland, that had not been sounded for 100 years, not since the white wolves came in the fell winter, when the brandywine was frozen over.
"Awake! Awake!"
Far away answering horns were heard. The alarm was spreading. The black figures fled from the house. One of them let fall a hobbit cloak on the step as he ran. In the lane the noise of hoofs broke out, and gathering to a gallop, went hammering away into the darkness. All about Crick Hollow there was the sound of horns blowing, and voices crying and feet running. But the black riders rode like a gale to the north gate. Let the people blow. Sauron would deal with them later. Meanwhile, they had another errand. They knew now that the house was empty and the ring had gone. They rode down the guards at the gate and vanished from the Shire. In the early night, Frodo woke from deep sleep, suddenly, as if some sound or presence had disturbed him. He saw that Strider was sitting alert in his chair. His eyes gleamed in the light of the fire, which had been tended and was burning brightly. But he made no sign or movement. Frodo soon went to sleep again, but his dreams were again troubled with a noise of wind and of galloping hooves. The wind seemed to be curling round the house and shaking it, and far off he heard a horn blowing wildly. He opened his eyes and heard a cock crowing lustily in the inn-yard. Strider had drawn the curtains and pushed back the shutters with a clang. The first grey light of day was in the room, and a cold air was coming through the open window. As soon as Strider had roused them all, he led the way to their bedrooms. When they saw them, they were glad that they had taken his advice. The windows had been forced open and were swinging, and the curtains were flapping. The beds were tossed about, and the bolsters slashed and flung upon the floor. The brown mat was torn to pieces. Strider immediately went to fetch the landlord. Poor Mr. Butterbur looked sleepy and frightened. He'd hardly closed his eyes all night, so he said, but he had never heard a sound.
never has such a thing happened in my time," he cried, raising his hands in horror. "Guests unable to sleep in their beds, and good bolsters ruined at all. What are we coming to?"
"Dark times," said Strider. "But for the present you may be left in peace, when you've got rid of us. We will leave at once. Never mind about breakfast. A drink and a bite standing will have to do. We shall be packed in a few minutes."
Mr. Butterbur hurried off to see that their ponies were got ready, and to fetch them a bite. But very soon he came back in dismay. The ponies had vanished. The stable doors had all been opened in the night, and they were gone. Not only Merry's ponies, but every other horse and beast in the place. Frodo was crushed by the news. How could they hope to reach Rivendell on foot, pursued by mounted enemies? They might as well set out for the moon. Strider sat silent for a while, looking at the hobbits, as if he was weighing up their strength and courage.
"Ponies would not help us to escape horsemen," he said at last, thoughtfully, as if he guessed what Frodo had in mind. "We should not go much slower on foot, not on the roads that I mean to take. I was going to walk in any case. It's the food and stores that trouble me. We can't count on getting anything to eat between here and Rivendell, except what we take with us, and we ought to take plenty to spare, for we may be delayed, or forced to go round about, far out of the direct way. How much are you prepared to carry on your backs?"
"As much as we must," said Pippin with a sinking heart, but trying to show that he was tougher than he looked, or felt.
"I can carry enough for two," said Sam defiantly.
"Can't anything be done, Mr. Butterbur?" asked Frodo. "Can't we get a couple of ponies in the village, or even one just for the baggage? I don't suppose we could hire them, but we might be able to buy them," he added doubtfully, wondering if he could afford it.
"I doubt it," said the landlord unhappily. "The two or three riding ponies that there were in Bree were stabled in my yard, and they're gone. As for other animals, horses or ponies for draught or what not, there are very few of them in Bree, and they won't be for sale. But I'll do what I can. I'll rout out Bob and send him round as soon as maybe."
"Yes," said Strider reluctantly. "You'd better do that. I'm afraid we shall have to try to get one pony at least. But so ends all hope of starting early and slipping away quietly. We might as well have blown a horn to announce our departure. That was part of their plan, no doubt."
"There's one crumb of comfort," said Merry, "and more than a crumb, I hope. We can have breakfast while we wait, and sit down to it. Let's get hold of Nob."
In the end there was more than 3 hours' delay. Bob came back with a report that no horse or pony was to be got for love or money in the neighbourhood, except one. Bill Ferney had one that he might possibly sell.
"A poor old half-starved creature he is," said Bob. "But he won't part with it for less than thrice its worth, seeing how you're placed, not if I know Bill Ferney."
"Bill Ferney?" said Frodo. "Isn't there some trick? Wouldn't the beast bolt back to him with all our stuff, or help in tracking us, or something?"
"I wonder," said Strider. "But I can't imagine any animal running home to him once it got away.
I fancy this is only an afterthought of kind Master Ferney's, just a way of increasing his profits from the affair. The chief danger is that the poor beast is probably at death's door, but there does not seem any choice. What does he want for it?"
Bill Ferney's price was 12 silver pennies, and that was indeed at least 3 times the pony's value in those parts. It proved to be a bony, underfed, and dispirited animal, but it didn't look like dying just yet. Mr. Butterbur paid for it himself, and offered Merry another 18 pence as some compensation for the lost animals. He was an honest man, and well off, as things were reckoned in Bree, but 30 silver pennies was a sore blow to him, and being cheated by Bill Ferney made it harder to bear. As a matter of fact, he came out on the right side in the end. It turned out later that only one horse had been actually stolen. The others had been driven off, or had bolted in terror, and were found wandering in different corners of the Breeland.
Merry's ponies had escaped altogether, and eventually, having a good deal of sense, they made their way to the downs in search of Fatty Lumpkin. So they came under the care of Tom Bombadil for a while, and were well off. But when news of the events at Bree came to Tom's ears, he sent them to Mr. Butterbur, who thus got 5 good beasts at a very fair price. They had to work harder in Bree, but Bob treated them well, so on the whole they were lucky. They missed a dark and dangerous journey, but they never came to Rivendell. However, in the meanwhile, for all Mr. Butterbur knew, his money was gone for good or for bad, and he had other troubles, for there was a great commotion as soon as the remaining guests were astir and heard news of the raid on the inn. The southern travellers had lost several horses and blamed the innkeeper loudly, until it became known that one of their own number had also disappeared in the night, none other than Bill Fernie's squint-eyed companion. Suspicion fell on him at once.
"If you pick up with a horse thief and bring him to my house," said Butterbur angrily, "you ought to pay for all the damage yourselves and not come shouting at me. Go and ask Fernie where your handsome friend is."
But it happened that he was nobody's friend, and nobody could recollect when he had joined their party. After their breakfast, the hobbits had to repack and get together further supplies for the longer journey they were now expecting. It was close on 10 o'clock before they got off at last. By that time the whole of Bree was buzzing with excitement. Frodo's vanishing trick, the appearance of the black horseman, the robbing of the stables, and not least the news that Strider the Ranger had joined the mysterious hobbits, made such a tale as would last for many uneventful years. Most of the inhabitants of Bree and Staddel, and many even from Coombe and Archet, were crowded in the road to see the travellers start. The other guests in the inn were at the doors or hanging out of the windows. Strider had changed his mind, and he decided to leave Bree by the main road. Any attempt to set off across the country at once would only make matters worse. Half the inhabitants would follow them, to see what they were up to, and to prevent them from trespassing. They said farewell to Nob and Bob, and took leave of Mr. Butterbur with many thanks. "I hope we shall meet again some day, when things are merry once more," said Frodo. "I should like nothing better than to stay in your house in peace for a while." They tramped off, anxious and downhearted, under the eyes of the crowd. Not all the faces were friendly, nor all the words that were shouted, but Strider seemed to be held in awe by most of the Breelanders, and those that he stared at shut their mouths and drew away. He walked in front with Frodo. Next came Merry and Pippin, and last came Sam, leading the pony, which was laden with as much of their baggage as they had the heart to give it. But already it looked less dejected, as if it approved of the change in its fortunes. Sam was chewing an apple thoughtfully. He had a pocket full of them, a parting present from Nob and Bob. "Apples for walking, and a pipe for sitting," he said. "But I reckon I'll miss them both before long." The hobbits took no notice of the inquisitive heads that peeped out of doors, or popped over walls and fences as they passed, but as they drew near to the further gate, Frodo saw a dark, ill-kept house behind a thick hedge, the last house in the village. In one of the windows he caught a glimpse of a sallow face with sly, slanting eyes, but it vanished at once. "So that's where the southerner is hiding," he thought. "He looks more than half like a goblin." Over the hedge another man was staring boldly. He had heavy black brows and dark, scornful eyes. His large mouth curled in a sneer. He was smoking a short black pipe. As they approached, he took it out of his mouth and spat.
"Morning, Longshanks," he said. "Off early? Found some friends at last?"
Strider nodded, but did not answer.
"Morning, my little friends," he said to the others. "I suppose you know who you've taken up with. That stick at North Strider, that is, though I've heard other names not so pretty. Watch out tonight, and you, Sammy,
"Don't go ill-treating my poor old pony." "Pah!" he spat again. Sam turned quickly. "And you, Fernie," he said, "put your ugly face out of sight or it'll get hurt." With a sudden flick, quick as lightning, an apple left his hand and hit Bill square on the nose. He ducked too late, and curses came from behind the hedge.
"Waste of a good apple," said Sam regretfully, and strode on.
At last they left the village behind. The escort of children and stragglers that had followed them got tired and turned back at the south gate. Passing through, they kept on along the road for some miles. It bent to the left, curving back into its eastward line as it rounded the feet of Bree Hill, and then it began to run swiftly downwards into wooded country. To their left they could see some of the houses and hobbit holes of Staddle on the gentler southeastern slopes of the hill. Down in a deep hollow away north of the road there were wisps of rising smoke that showed where Coombe lay. Archet was hidden in the trees behind. After the road had run down some way, and had left Bree Hill standing tall and brown behind, they came on a narrow track that led off towards the north.
"This is where we leave the open and take to cover," said Strider.
"Not a short cut, I hope," said Pippin.
"Our last short cut through woods nearly ended in disaster."
"Ah! But you had not got me with you then," laughed Strider. "My cut's short or long. Don't go wrong."
He took a look up and down the road. No one was in sight, and he led the way quickly down towards the wooded valley. His plan, as far as they could understand it without knowing the country, was to go towards Archet at first, but to bear right and pass it on the east, and then to steer as straight as he could over the wild lands to Weathertop Hill. In that way they would, if all went well, cut off a great loop of the road, which further on bent southwards to avoid the Midgewater marshes. But, of course, they would have to pass through the marshes themselves, and Strider's description of them was not encouraging. However, in the meanwhile, walking was not unpleasant. Indeed, if it had not been for the disturbing events of the night before, they would have enjoyed this part of the journey better than any up to that time. The sun was shining, clear but not too hot. The woods in the valley were still leafy and full of colour, and seemed peaceful and wholesome. Strider guided them confidently among the many crossing paths, although left to themselves they would soon have been at a loss. He was taking a wandering course with many turns and doublings to put off any pursuit.
"Bill Fernie will have watched where we left the road for certain," he said, "though I don't think he'll follow us himself. He knows the land round here well enough, but he knows he's no match for me in a wood. It's what he may tell others that I'm afraid of. I don't suppose they are far away. If they think we've made for Archet, so much the better."
Whether because of Strider's skill or for some other reason, they saw no sign and heard no sound of any other living thing all that day. Neither two-footed, except birds, nor four-footed, except one fox and a few squirrels. The next day they began to steer a steady course eastwards, and still all was quiet and peaceful. On the third day out from Bree they came out of the Chetwood. The land had been falling steadily ever since they turned aside from the road, and they now entered a wide, flat expanse of country, much more difficult to manage. They were far beyond the borders of the Breeland, out in the pathless wilderness, and drawing near to the Midgewater marshes. The ground now became damp, and in places boggy, and here and there they came upon pools and wide stretches of reeds and rushes filled with the warbling of little hidden birds. They had to pick their way carefully to keep both dry-footed and on their proper course. At first they made fair progress, but as they went on, their passage became slower and more dangerous. The marshes were bewildering and treacherous, and there was no permanent trail even for rangers to find through their shifting quagmires. The flies began to torment them, and the air was full of clouds of tiny midges that crept up their sleeves and breeches and into their hair.
"I'm being eaten alive,"
cried Pippin. "Midge water! There are more midges than water!"
"What do they live on when they can't get hobbit?" asked Sam, scratching his neck.
They spent a miserable day in this lonely and unpleasant country. Their camping place was damp, cold, and uncomfortable, and the biting insects would not let them sleep. There were also abominable creatures haunting the reeds and tussocks, that from the sound of them were evil relatives of the cricket. There were thousands of them, and they squeaked all round,
"Neek breek, breek neek,"
unceasingly all the night, until the hobbits were nearly frantic. The next day, the fourth, was little better, and the night almost as comfortless. Though the Neekabreekers, as Sam called them, had been left behind, the midges still pursued them. As Frodo lay, tired but unable to close his eyes, it seemed to him that far away there came a light in the eastern sky. It flashed and faded many times. It was not the dawn, for that was still some hours off.
"What is the light?" he said to Strider, who had risen and was standing gazing ahead into the night.
"I don't know," Strider answered. "It's too distant to make out. It's like lightning that leaps up from hilltops."
Frodo lay down again, but for a long while he could still see the white flashes, and against them the tall, dark figure of Strider, standing silent and watchful. At last he passed into uneasy sleep. They had not gone far on the fifth day when they left the last straggling pools and reed beds of the marshes behind them. The land before them began steadily to rise again. Away in the distance eastward they could now see a line of hills. The highest of them was at the right of the line, and a little separated from the others. It had a conical shape, slightly flattened at the summit.
"That's Weathertop," said Strider. "The old road, which we have left far away on our right, runs to the south of it, and passes not far from its foot. We might reach it by noon tomorrow if we go straight towards it. I suppose we'd better do so."
"What do you mean?" asked Frodo.
"I mean, when we do get there, it's not certain what we shall find. It's close to the road."
"But surely we were hoping to find Gandalf there?"
"Yes, but the hope is faint. If he comes this way at all, he may not pass through Bree, and so he may not know what we're doing. And anyway, unless by luck we arrive almost together, we shall miss one another. It will not be safe for him or for us to wait there long. If the riders fail to find us in the wilderness, they're likely to make for Weathertop themselves. It commands a wide view all round. Indeed, there are many birds and beasts in this country that could see us, as we stand here from that hilltop. Not all the birds are to be trusted, and there are other spies more evil than they are."
The hobbits looked anxiously at the distant hills. Sam looked up into the pale sky, fearing to see hawks or eagles hovering over them with bright, unfriendly eyes.
"You do make me feel uncomfortable and lonesome, Strider," he said.
"What do you advise us to do?" asked Frodo.
"I think," answered Strider slowly, as if he was not quite sure, "I think the best thing is to go as straight eastward from here as we can, to make for the line of hills, not for Weathertop. There we can strike a path I know that runs at their feet. It will bring us to Weathertop from the north and less openly. Then we shall see what we shall see."
All that day they plodded along, until the cold and early evening came down. The land became drier and more barren, but mists and vapours lay behind them on the marshes. A few melancholy birds were piping and wailing, until the round red sun sank slowly into the western shadows, then an empty silence fell.
The hobbits thought of the soft light of sunset glancing through the cheerful windows of Bag End far away.
At the day's end they came to a stream that wandered down from the hills to lose itself in the stagnant marshland, and they went up along its banks while the light lasted. It was already night when at last they halted and made their camp under some stunted alder trees by the shores of the stream. Ahead there loomed now against the dusky sky the bleak and treeless backs of the hills. That night they set a watch, and Strider, it seemed, did not sleep at all. The moon was waxing, and in the early night hours a cold grey light lay on the land.
Next morning they set out again, soon after sunrise. There was a frost in the air, and the sky was a pale, clear blue. The hobbits felt refreshed, as if they had had a night of unbroken sleep. Already they were getting used to walking on short commons, shorter at any rate than what in the Shire they would have thought barely enough to keep them on their legs. Pippin declared that Frodo was looking twice the hobbit that he had been.
"Very odd," said Frodo, tightening his belt, "considering that there is actually a great deal less of me. I hope the thinning process will not go on indefinitely, or I shall become a wraith."
"Do not speak of such things," said Strider quickly, and with surprising earnestness. The hills drew nearer. They made an undulating ridge, often rising almost to 1,000 feet, and here and there falling again to low clefts or passes leading into the eastern land beyond. Along the crest of the ridge, the hobbits could see what looked to be the remains of green-grown walls and dikes, and in the clefts there still stood the ruins of old works of stone. By night they had reached the feet of the westward slopes, and there they camped. It was the night of the 5th of October, and they were 6 days out from Bree. In the morning they found, for the first time since they had left the Chetwood, a track plain to see. They turned right and followed it southwards. It ran cunningly, taking a line that seemed chosen so as to keep as much hidden as possible from the view, both of the hilltops above and of the flats to the west. It dived into dells and hugged steep banks, and where it passed over flatter and more open ground on either side of it, there were lines of large boulders and hewn stones that screened the travellers almost like a hedge.
"I wonder who made this path, and what for?" said Merry, as they walked along one of these avenues, where the stones were unusually large and closely set. "I'm not sure that I like it. It has a, well, rather a barrow-whitish look. Is there any barrow on Weathertop?"
"No, there's no barrow on Weathertop, nor on any of these hills," answered Strider. "The men of the West did not live here, though in their later days they defended the hills for a while against the evil that came out of Angmar. This path was made to serve the forts along the walls. But long before, in the first days of the North Kingdom, they built a great watchtower on Weathertop. Armonsul, they called it. It was burned and broken, and nothing remains of it now but a tumbled ring, like a rough crown on the old hill's head. Yet once it was tall and fair. It is told that Elendil stood there watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the last alliance." The hobbits gazed at Strider. It seemed that he was learned in old lore as well as in the ways of the wild.
"Who was Gil-galad?" asked Merry,
but Strider did not answer and seemed to be lost in thought. Suddenly a low voice murmured, "Gil-galad was an elven king, of him the harpers sadly sing, the last whose realm was fair and free between the mountains and the sea. His sword was long, his lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen, the countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield. But long ago he rode away, and where he dwelleth none can say, for into darkness fell his star in Mordor, where the shadows are." The others turned in amazement, for the voice was Sam's.
"Don't stop," said Merry. "That's all I know," stammered Sam, blushing. "I learned it from Mr. Bilbo when I was a lad. He used to tell me tales like that, knowing how I was always one for hearing about elves. It was Mr. Bilbo as taught me my letters.
He was mighty book-learned, was dear old Mr. Bilbo,
and he wrote poetry.
He wrote what I have just said."
"He did not make it up," said Strider. "It's part of the lay that is called the Fall of Gil-galad, which is in an ancient tongue. Bilbo must have translated it. I never knew that."
"There was a lot more," said Sam, "all about Mordor. I didn't learn that part. It gave me the shivers. I never thought I should be going that way myself."
"Going to Mordor?"
cried Pippin. "I hope it won't come to that."
"Do not speak that name so loudly," said Strider.
It was already midday when they drew near the southern end of the path, and saw before them, in the pale clear light of the October sun, a grey-green bank, leading up like a bridge onto the northward slope of the hill. They decided to make for the top at once, while the daylight was broad. Concealment was no longer possible, and they could only hope that no enemy or spy was observing them. Nothing was to be seen moving on the hill. If Gandalf was anywhere about, there was no sign of him. On the western flank of Weathertop, they found a sheltered hollow, at the bottom of which there was a bowl-shaped dell with grassy sides. There they left Sam and Pippin with the pony and their packs and luggage. The other three went on. After half an hour's plodding climb, Strider reached the crown of the hill. Frodo and Merry followed, tired and breathless. The last slope had been steep and rocky. On the top they found, as Strider had said, a wide ring of ancient stonework, now crumbling or covered with age-long grass. But in the centre a cairn of broken stones had been piled. They were blackened, as if with fire. About them the turf was burned to the roots, and all within the ring the grass was scorched and shrivelled, as if flames had swept the hilltop. But there was no sign of any living thing. Standing upon the rim of the ruined circle, they saw all round below them a wide prospect, for the most part of lands empty and featureless, except for patches of woodland away to the south, beyond which they caught here and there the glint of distant water. Beneath them on this southern side there ran like a ribbon the old road, coming out of the west and winding up and down, until it faded behind a ridge of dark land to the east. Nothing was moving on it. Following its line eastward with their eyes, they saw the mountains. The nearer foothills were brown and sombre. Behind them stood taller shapes of grey, and behind those again were high white peaks glimmering among the clouds.
Well, here we are, said Merry, and very cheerless and inviting it looks. There is no water in Nulter, and no inn of Gandalf. Blame him for not waiting, if he ever came here.
I wonder, said Strider, looking round thoughtfully. Even if he was a day or two behind us at Bree, he could have arrived here first. He can ride very swiftly when need presses. Suddenly he stooped and looked at the stone on the top of the cairn. It was flatter than the others, and whiter, as if it had escaped the fire. He picked it up and examined it, turning it in his fingers.
"This has been handled recently," he said. "What do you think of those marks?"
On the flat underside, Frodo saw some scratches. "There seems to be a stroke, a dot, and three more strokes," he said.
"The stroke on the left might be a G-rune with thin branches," said Strider. "It might be a sign left by Gandalf, though one cannot be sure. The scratches are fine, and they certainly look fresh. But the marks might mean something quite different, and have nothing to do with us. Rangers use runes, and they come here sometimes."
"What could they mean, even if Gandalf made them?"
asked Merry.
"I should say," answered Strider, "that they stood for G3, and were a sign that Gandalf was here on October the 3rd, that is, 3 days ago now. It would also show that he was in a hurry, and danger was at hand, so that he had no time or did not dare to write anything longer or plainer. If that is so, we must be wary."
"I wish we could feel sure that he made the marks, whatever they may mean," said Frodo. "It would be a great comfort to know that he was on the way, in front of us or behind us."
"Perhaps," said Strider. "For myself, I believe that he was here and was in danger. There have been scorching flames here, and now the light that we saw 3 nights ago in the eastern sky comes back to my mind. I guess that he was attacked on this hilltop, but with what result I cannot tell. He is here no longer, and we must now look after ourselves and make our own way to Rivendell as best we can."
"How far is Rivendell?" asked Merry, gazing round wearily. The world looked wild and wide from Weathertop.
I don't know if the road has ever been measured in miles beyond the Forsaken Inn, a day's journey east of Rhee, answered Strider. Some say it is so far, and some say otherwise. It's a strange road, and folk are glad to reach their journey's end, whether the time is long or short. But I know not how long it would take me on my own feet, with fair weather and no ill fortune. 12 days from here to the ford of Bruinen, where the road crosses the loud water that runs out of Rivendell. We have at least a fortnight's journey before us, for I do not think we shall be able to use the road.
A fortnight, said Frodo. A lot may happen in that time.
It may, said Strider.
They stood for a while silent on the hilltop, near its southward edge. In that lonely place Frodo for the first time fully realized his homelessness and danger. He wished bitterly that his fortune had left him in the quiet and beloved Shire. He stared down at the hateful road, leading back westward to his home. Suddenly he was aware that two black specks were moving slowly along it, going westward. And looking again, he saw that three others were creeping eastward to meet them. He gave a cry and clutched Strider's arm. Look, he said, pointing downwards.
At once Strider flung himself on the ground behind the ruined circle, pulling Frodo down beside him. Merry threw himself alongside.
What is it? He whispered.
I don't know, but I fear the worst, answered Strider. Slowly they crawled up to the edge of the ring again and peered through a cleft between two jagged stones. The light was no longer bright, for the clear morning had faded, and clouds creeping out of the east had now overtaken the sun as it began to go down. They could all see the black specks, but neither Frodo nor Merry could make out their shapes for certain. Yet something told them that there, far below, were black riders assembling on the road beyond the foot of the hill.
Yes,
said Strider, whose keener sight left them in no doubt. The enemy is here. Hastily they crept away and slipped down the north side of the hill to find their companions. Sam and Peregrine had not been idle. They had explored the small dell and the surrounding slopes. Not far away they found a spring of clear water in the hillside, and near it footprints not more than a day or two old. In the dell itself they found recent traces of a fire and other signs of a hasty camp. There were some fallen rocks on the edge of the dell nearest to the hill. Behind them Sam came upon a small store of firewood, neatly stacked.
"I wonder if old Gandalf has been here," he said to Pippin. "Whoever it was put this stuff here meant to come back, it seems."
Strider was greatly interested in these discoveries.
"I wish I had waited and explored the ground down here myself," he said, hurrying off to the spring to examine the footprints. "It's just as I feared," he said when he came back. "Sam and Pippin have trampled the soft ground, and the marks are spoiled or confused. Rangers have been here lately. It is they who left the firewood behind. But there are also several newer tracks that were not made by rangers. At least one set was made only a day or two ago by heavy boots. At least one. I cannot now be certain, but I think there were many booted feet." He paused and stood in anxious thought.
This ends Disc 7.